Good morning. My name is Kayla, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the MBPE Investor Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, you may press the pound key. Thank you. Mr. Peter Vanley, you may begin your conference.
Thank you very much. Hello and welcome to the March 2016 MBPE Investor Update Call. This is Peter Vanley, and I'm joined today by my colleague Paul Daggett. The presentation we'll be using today, as well as our recently published annual report and February NAV statements, can be found on our website, www.nbprivateequitypartners.com. For those of you that follow us regularly, you'll notice that the format of this presentation and the annual report are a little bit different than in the past. Our goal was to provide you with actually as much or even more information than we have historically, but to do that in a more concise, easy-to-follow format. We welcome any feedback you may have on this enhanced format and appreciate any comments that you may have for us. So let's begin with the presentation on page two. As you know, the objective of MBPE is to provide investors with the opportunity for capital appreciation and current income, and we seek to do this by investing directly into private equity-backed companies alongside leading private equity firms. Through MBPE, we invest across the capital structure of private equity-backed companies in a best relative value approach. We think that this opportunity allows us to provide our investors with opportunity for both good returns and also lower risk as we can move across the capital structure of private equity backed businesses. Now, we do this by making use of the sourcing and due diligence capabilities of Neuberger Berman, our manager, and I'll speak more about that in a minute. Also, we believe MBPE offers our investors a very efficient way to access a high-quality, appropriately diversified portfolio of private equity investments at a lower all-in cost to investors than most other listed private equity vehicles. And we'll give you some information on that during our presentation today as well. So quickly on the Neuberger Berman private equity platform on page three. At Neuberger Berman, which manages $35 billion in private equity, have active relationships with over 400 different private equity firms, and are reviewing about 270 private equity funds a year, have investing about $2 billion a year in private equity across funds and direct investments, and have a team of 100 investment professionals in seven offices across four continents. So very, very, very deep team. Very, very, very large platform that MBPE has the ability to benefit from. So let's turn specifically to some of the key performance highlights of MBPE for the year 2015 on page four. So during 2015, NAV increased by 4.9%, a solid number below what we would like MBPE to be doing. Longer term and below what we have been able to do longer term, but still a solid year. Share price was down 7% during 2015, and the share price total return was minus 2.8%, obviously with the spread being the 4.2% dividend yield that was paid during the year. MBPE has a strong capital position with $819 million of assets. And a very strong commitment coverage ratio of over 300%. In terms of cash flows, 2015 was actually a record year for MBPE with $308 million of distributions from investments, and we invested $226 million into new investments and paid $23.4 million in dividends out to our shareholders. So very strong cash flows on all sides there. In terms of dividends, the run rate dividend as of the end of February, 3.6% dividend yield on NAV or 5% on share price. And importantly, that dividend is 105% covered by the contractual cash income on earned income investments. Also, during 2015, we had in place our Sterling dividend option, which I'll touch on in a bit, as well allowing our investors who want to have their dividend paid in Sterling to receive it in that way, and also instituted a dividend reinvestment plan as well for investors who don't want the cash but actually would like to reinvest into NBPE shares in a very efficient manner. So with that, I will now hand it over to Paul, who will give you some more financial highlights and portfolio details, and then I'll come back to talk about some more details on performance. Paul?
Thank you, Peter. So I'll start on slide 5, which looks at both sets of numbers that we released on Tuesday, both the 29th of February numbers as well as the year-end numbers as of 31st of December 2015. As you're going to see on the following slides, and as Peter just described, we have seen a lot of liquidity over the last 14 months. And what you'll see here is that the private equity investment level has fallen somewhat from the end of 2014 to today. We moved from 121% investment level to 115% as of the 29th of February. Most notably, during that period, we saw large distributions from income as well as equity investments, and particularly from funds, which distributed about $56 million, about 25% of their value as of the end of 2014 was distributed over the following 14 months. That obviously has had an effect on the credit facility, which we have paid down significantly from the end of 2014, from $90 million drawn to $48 million drawn as of the end of February. And importantly, I think that brings out a strategic point around the credit facility, which is that we have it there to use it when we see opportunities in the market. Equally, when the opportunities haven't been as strong, we've used that opportunity to pay it down. So it's really there to help us to execute our strategy and to be opportunistic. And really, as of today, you can see we paid it down because of that net cash flow back to us over that period, which we'll talk about more. Final point on this page really is that the total NAV, including cumulative dividends, has moved up from 1510 at the end of 2014 to 1557 as of today. So we have, as Peter described, increased the NAV of the vehicle, not as much as we would like, but it still has grown over that time period. Slide 6 is a value bridge that looks at our fair value development since the end of 2014. We started at $841 million of fair value and ended up at $782 million. That was driven by net distributions to us when you net the contributions and the distributions shown on this slide of $111 million paid back to us. And the other sort of key part of this bridge is that we have grown our value, so the investments have performed over this time in total by $52 million between those equity, income, and fund investments. Slide 7 looks at the portfolio liquidity. We have had record distributions in 2015. You'll see that was driven by income investments, particularly in Q2 and Q3 of last year. So investments including Bluecoat, Deltek, Icaria, Kick, Arcroma, and Evans were all realized in that time period, producing very strong distributions back to us. And that's continued into 2016. In the first 2 months, you'll see we've already received $48 million of distributions, most notably in that the distribution to us of stock and the subsequent sale of Sabre is part of that $33 million of equity distributions. So that, again, that was an extremely strong realization for us. And we, as we've always described, as soon as we were able to control the stock, I think made a good decision around that exit. On slide 8, we look at the capital deployments. And again, the deployment was not at the same pace as distributions back to us, which maybe describes the market somewhat. We deployed $226 million into new investments in 2015, and so far in 2016 have deployed $20 million into equity and income investments. On the right of the page, you'll see the year of investment, and one thing we always talk about is the importance of vintage year diversification. And I think this shows that we have good vintage year diversification, both investing in recent years in 2015 and 2016, while maintaining some investments, which, as you'll see later, which are performing well from some earlier vintage years as well. Moving on to slide 9, the portfolio review. This looks at the asset class of investments, and you'll see that equity investments today are 41% of the portfolio, which is 75 investments into direct equity. This provides the opportunity for capital gains, and it's a diversified portfolio of small, mid, and large cap direct investments. We also have 37% of the portfolio in income investments, which provide the opportunity for income which supports the dividend, as Peter described. It's also, to us, a logical place to invest in that it does allow you to invest into attractive companies at in securities which are senior to the equity. So we think it's a very attractive risk-adjusted return for the portfolio. Finally, on the fund investments, we have a legacy portfolio which is very much in realization mode. As of the end of February, it was $172 million of fair value. And if you compare that to the peak, which occurred in about 2010 in our fund value, which was almost $500 million in 48 funds, we're now at $172 million in 35 funds. So both through secondary sales and much more notably through ongoing distributions and the liquidation of that portfolio, it continues to run off and produce cash flows for us to reinvest into those equity and income investments. Slide 10 looks at diversification by two other metrics. First, on geography, as we've often described, we are overweighting North America. That's a deliberate tactical move. We have offices on several other continents, including Europe, Asia, and Latin America, but really have made the decision that North America continues to be the most attractive market for private equity. We review that all the time. We'll make tactical changes as and when we see necessary, but at the moment, we're very happy with our choice in terms of bias towards North America. And then on the right, industry, and again, we're well diversified by industry. The two largest sectors are technology at just under 23% and healthcare at about 17%. The other thing that I will note, as it often is a question, is that energy is just below 7% of the portfolio at this point in time. And importantly, the two largest exposures, which are Saguaro and a company we call oil and gas company since we're not able to disclose its name, are two companies which make up about 3.5% of the total portfolio. So around half of the energy exposure is in those two companies. They're both E&P companies with low leverage, good acreage, and we believe are continued to be well positioned. Obviously not as well as when we underwrote those, but they are both companies which are so far performing well, even in this downturn. So overall, we feel that the energy exposure we have is reasonably well placed. Slide 11 looks in a little bit more detail at the equity investment portfolio. As I described, there's 75 equity co-investments with $324 million of value. This is well diversified across vintage year, geography, and industry. Importantly, it's also well diversified across sponsor. And we have a very strong platform. We deploy about $2 billion per year into private equity investments, which gives us a strong position when talking to sponsors about co-investments. We have about 400 fund relationships, and we invest in about 4% of the transactions that we look at in our co-investment platform. That leads us to the right, the metrics of the investments we have made in NBPE, which you'll see are of a reasonable valuation of 10.3 times is where we hold that portfolio. Compare that to the Russell at the end of the year, which was at 15.1 times. EBITDA on average. So we feel that we're getting into these companies at a reasonable valuation and also with reasonable leverage. You'll see the average is 4.7 times net debt to EBITDA. The portfolio has grown over the last year, producing 3% revenue growth and 15% EBITDA growth. And exits that we generated during 2015 have produced good results with 1.9 times gross multiple and a 25% IRR in those 8 exits that occurred in 2015. Slide 12 looks at the ongoing investments that we have in the portfolio. And as you would expect, If you look at, first of all, the chart on the right, the most recent investments tend to be marked at cost or just above cost in the case of some of the 2015 investments. And as you get older, the pleasing thing is that they generally are accreting value. So as you look at the 2014, 2013, 2012, 2011, these are marked significantly above cost, and we feel are performing extremely well. So the pie chart on the left shows you that 92% of investments are at cost or above, with very few underperforming at this point in time. So we're pleased with the performance of the portfolio and the outlook of the companies in the portfolio. Slide 13 is a new slide that we've added. One thing I think we've often talked about is the pace of distributions coming from the portfolio, and we wanted to illustrate that these distributions not only have produced cash, but they produce very strong overall investment returns. So this looks at the exits that we had in 2014, 15, and 16 year to date. This is full exits only, so this doesn't include recapitalizations or IPOs or any partial exits, which we'll talk about a little bit more later. But you can see that on average, we produce very strong results from the exits that we've seen in the last just over 2 years, with 2.1 times multiple in 2014, 1.9 times in 2015, and then on average in two exits that we've had so far in 2016, 3.7 times our invested capital. 14 is another way to look at the valuation of our portfolio. And what this does is it looks at exits, which in this case does include IPOs at the point of IPO. Obviously, we haven't fully exited those companies, but it is a public mark instead of a private mark, so we've included it in this analysis. It looks at where companies were held versus where they were ultimately exited and the uplift that occurred first one, then two, then three quarters prior to that exit. And so three quarters prior to exit events in our portfolio over the last year and 2 months, you'll see that on average those companies were held at a 30% discount to where they were ultimately exited. Obviously that gives us some validation of the valuations that we had within the portfolio because those companies were ultimately exited for that 30% premium. As you move closer to the exit, clearly some of that oncoming exit is priced in to the valuation, so it becomes smaller over time. But again, I think that's just one thing that we put in there as a data point to help you understand how private equity valuations and specifically valuations within MBPE work. Slide 15 looks at the new investments we made in 2016. We made four new investments, and as I looked at these particular investments, I think it's a really good illustration of the diversity of the types of transactions that we do invest in the portfolio. So four different businesses here across four different sectors or subsectors and very different transactions, and I'll just give 30 seconds or so on each company. GC Services was a family-owned business that provides outsourced accounts receivable and customer care services. It's really a business process outsourcing business, which was a mid-cap transaction with a reasonable amount of leverage at a good entry price. We like the business because it has a blue-chip customer base with very long average customer retention rates, and to some degree is a counter-cyclical type of investment in that outsourcing and specifically accounts receivable tend to be counter-cyclical in nature. SolarWinds is a technology buyout with Thoma Bravo. You'll have seen us do a number of transactions with Thoma Bravo, which is a specialist in specifically software investments. This was a public-to-private transaction. As with most software businesses, it has very high gross margins, high free cash flow generation, and is a difficult product to displace in that it is highly embedded within an organization and their IT stack. So again, it's the type of transaction that we like to do specifically with Thoma Bravo, but really across technology. Mills Fleet Farm is a recent transaction we did with KKR. Again, this was a family-owned business that was acquired in February. KKR has done very well in these types of consumer retail business. This specific one has 35 different stores across the Midwest of the U.S. It's what you would call a destination retailer with everything under one roof, from farm and pet supplies to auto parts to apparel. And again, this was a company that, if you look at it through the last recession, was very resilient in the last downturn. So we feel it's both a good sponsor who has a good track record on these types of transactions, and also a business that's been proven through a downturn. Finally, Incipio is a smaller growth equity transaction with a firm called Good Partners, which is a consumer retail specialist. This is a designer and developer of electronic accessories. It produces mostly things like cases, chargers, speakers for smartphones. Good has participated in several different transactions in and around this space in the past and has a very strong track record. This is, again, a founder-owned business. This is a minority transaction, and we feel is very well placed in this particular part of the market. So across these four investments, you'll see investments of different sizes. They're all primary buyouts in this case. And I'd say the other thing to note is that they're all with sponsors who are really experts in these particular areas, have proven track records in these types of transactions, and who we know well, often having partnered with in the past. 16 looks at the largest equity investments, and this is the top 10 equity investments in the portfolio. These top 10 account for just over a third of the total equity portfolio. So not surprisingly, these tend to be the companies that are performing best. All of these companies actually are marked above cost. And again, I've just described some of the companies, so I won't labor any of the stories here, and most of these are companies we've talked about in the past. There's three healthcare investments, two technology, two financial services, two energy, one business services. So again, a good cross-section of the types of sectors and types of companies we like to see in the portfolio. And many of these, I think, are very well positioned to continue to produce good results and hopefully exits over the short to medium term. So now moving on to our income investments on slide 17. We have 43 income investments at this point, generating in total $286 million of fair value. And as we've discussed, the purpose of our income investments is twofold. First of all, we think it's a very attractive asset class to invest in that is senior to equity. So if you look at where we, in effect, entered these companies, they have 5.3 times total debt to EBITDA. So we look at this as entering companies with strong private equity ownership in sectors we like, which we are able to access at a much cheaper valuation point than you can in the equity at 5.3 times with 4 times debt senior to us in these particular investments. And that comes with a very strong cash yield of 9.8%. And again, as Peter described, that allows us to pay our dividend on a fully covered basis. So we're 105% dividend coverage from the income produced by that $286 million portfolio. So on slide 18, we look in a little bit more detail about our characteristics of our portfolio. And as I described, we feel it's a very attractive risk-adjusted return that is produced by the portfolio. And to look at some of the metrics that we look at, both on an individual basis and a portfolio basis, you'll see that 94% of income investments are in asset-like companies. That tends to mean they have strong free cash flow generation. Obviously, that's very important when you're making a debt investment. 68% of the companies are in a market-leading position. So they're number one or number two in their markets and well-positioned to continue to hold that market share, we believe. 55% of the income investments are in companies with a very strong equity cushion of 40% or more. And 58% of those investments are in companies with greater than a 25% EBITDA margin. Finally, and probably most importantly, 100% of the income investments in the portfolio are performing well and have no covenant issues. So again, to reiterate, we think it's a really strong income portfolio and an important differentiator of our fund compared to many others in that we're able to access these at very reasonable levels of pricing. Slide 19 looks at new income investments that we've made this year, and there are only two that we've made this year. So it has, to date, been a quieter year for investments in this space. As we've always described, we are happy to invest in the best opportunities as and when they come along and never invest simply because we feel we need to invest in any particular area. So we're above 100%, and you know, As I described, we feel that we'll invest when the good opportunities come along, and you've seen us invest at a fairly rapid pace in this space in 2014 and early 2015, and a little bit less recently, which again probably describes the market to some degree. The two investments we did make, MedAssets was a second lien investment that we actually entered on a secondary basis, a really interesting company, and again a good, I think, story that describes our investment strategy in the space, in that this is a healthcare business. Really, it's a software and service business in the revenue cycle management and cost management space, which is a provider of those products for hospitals. Has a very diversified customer base, very strong renewal rates with three-year contracts, and very strong free cash flow generation. But most importantly, the way this describes our strategy is that we are willing to invest in companies which have a shorter expected time to liquidity. The fact that we are able to recycle investments within our fund allows us to invest in these type of assets. And this was actually an investment that we made, as I described, on a secondary basis in January, and was actually realized through a recapitalization in February. So this is an extreme example, but is a good example of the types of things that we do, both in terms of what the company does, but also that shorter time to liquidity. And then finally, on the income portfolio on slide 20, this looks at the top 10 investments. You'll see they are more concentrated than our equity investments, with these top 10 investments accounting for just about half of the income portfolio. As I described, we feel very strongly about these investments. So these are conviction investments we make, which allows us to be slightly more concentrated. And on average, they have 5.3 times total debt to EBITDA. You can see they have strong cash yields. They have variable interest rates. People aren't as concerned at the moment about rising interest rates, but these all have LIBOR floors, typically of 1 or 1.25%, and they are very well diversified across sectors, with here 4 technology, 4 consumer, 1 industrials, and 1 healthcare. And one final thing I'll say is just when we look at technology, we have 2 investments on the bottom, MetaMedia and Deltek, and ultimately these are technology investments, but we always look through to the end market as well. So in the case of the MetaMedia investment, this is a healthcare investment ultimately. So although it's technology, we look through to the end market. Similarly, Deltek is really focused in the government space, so again, a different end market. And every time we talk about technology, going back to this slide where we look at overall technology being about 23% of the portfolio, you also need to look through to the ultimate end markets, which is something we do take account of as we do that. So with that, I'll hand it back to Peter to look in more detail at our performance in 2015.
Thank you very much, Paul. So if you turn to page 21, you can see some more details about our 2015 performance. The gross return for NBPE's portfolio during 2015 calendar year was 7.9%, and you can see here how that was broken out. That was 15.7% return for a direct equity investment, 6.1% IRR for the income investments, and minus 1.5% for the legacy fund investments. Now, particularly between the direct equity investments and the income investments, I think it's important to break that down a little bit more detail. Because there's some things going on in our royalty-backed healthcare program, which actually masks some of those numbers a bit, and want to provide more granularity on that. So, just a step back, our healthcare credit program is not everything that's called healthcare in the portfolio. What that is, it's the business that we have where it's actually investing into opportunities where our returns are backed by royalty streams and intellectual property-backed healthcare. So the sort of software or service businesses Paul described would not be included in that portion of the portfolio. Now that the royalty-backed healthcare credit program has been a very strong performer for NBPE over the long term. We've generated a 17% IRR on that portion of the program over time. And even within that program, we invest in both debt and equity of those royalty-backed opportunities. And if you can see there, what we tried to do here on the bottom part of page 21 is show our overall portfolio with the healthcare portion, with that, the royalty-backed healthcare program sort of taken out. So if you look at how the performance of the portfolio was, excluding that healthcare program, what you see is an 11.4% IRR during 2015 for our equity investments, and 9.7% for our income investments. And you can see that the healthcare royalty program, while generating very strong returns over the long term of 17%, was minus 1.8% during 2015. Now, the reason for all this is that basically what you can see and implicit in the numbers here is that the equity opportunities inside that healthcare program performed very well, while there were a couple of income investments inside that healthcare program that didn't during 2015. So that had that net negative effect that resulted in the net minus 1.8% when you net out just the equity and the gains in the equity and the losses on the credit side inside that healthcare program during 2015. But what it also shows you is that the rest of our portfolio, we had very solid growth, solid returns on the equity side, and also very strong returns on the income side, excluding the healthcare program there. So I wanted to provide that degree of granularity and visibility to all of you on that. So let's look at the overall historical performance of NBPE. You can see that in more detail on page 22. Very solid medium and long-term returns for NBPE. If you look at over the shorter term, so, and by the way, importantly, these numbers are through February, through the end of February. You can see 1 year, the LTM through February was 3.7% return, total return on the assets of NBPE, and it was a slightly down year to date. We're down slightly year to date, really not from any private valuations. Those are just from the public's FX movements and expenses. From a share price perspective, you can see that on a one-year basis, obviously we're disappointed with the share price return there. This was through the end of February, as well as the year-to-date performance. Importantly, though, the share price has actually increased by 3.7% from the end of February through March 15. So actually that takes us from the minus 2.4% on the year. We're actually now positive on the year through where we are today. So let's talk a bit about dividends, because that's obviously also an important portion of the total return that we've been able to generate for our shareholders. At the current dividend rates, we have a dividend yield of 3.6% on NAV or 5% on share price. And that dividend, once again, is more than fully covered by the income coming from the income investments in our portfolio. Mentioned that I talked about the Sterling election and the dividend reinvestment plan. The Sterling election, once again, allows any of our shareholders to, with the check of a box, to elect to receive their dividend in Sterling rather than U.S. dollar. We're averaging right just under a 10% take-up rate on that from our shareholders, and so we view that as a real success and a real something that makes NBPE more attractive for UK-based investors. Also, we've instituted our dividend reinvestment plan that also allows investors who don't want necessarily to receive a cash dividend to go then and just have that roll directly into the purchase of shares and increase their percentage ownership of NBPE. And that's also been a program that we've had meaningful take up on since instituting it. So very happy with the progress on both of those. Now let's look at the capital position of NBPE on page 24. A very strong capital position. Won't go through all the numbers here. The most important thing to say about capital position is, one, that our capital position is extremely strong, but also the obvious point about our credit facility and our ZDPs both coming up in next year. Wanted to make sure that everyone was fully aware that we are currently in discussions regarding refinancing, and we're confident that NBPE will continue to be able to have a strong capital position going forward. We will, of course, announce more on these topics in due course, but please be aware that that Neuberger Berman is the manager and the board of NBPE very focused on these refinancings, and actually very focused on continuing to maintain a strong capital structure for NBPE going forward. So you can see the NAV and share price development over the last year on page 25. We're currently at about a 25% discount, and let's dig into that discount a little bit more detail on page 26. You can see, you know, we're, as I said, about a 25% discount. That compares to, we're narrower discount than our private equity peers. The average of the direct vehicles and fund-to-funds are right around 28% discount, so we're a bit narrower than that, but we're a bit wider than the weighted average would be if you also include the credit funds and weighted all those different categories relative to their relative weightings inside of NBPE. So better than the private equity peers on average, but slightly lower than we think we should be just based on the weighted average relative to the peer group, including credit funds. So let's focus a little bit about and page 27, and this is something that we haven't gone into as much detail in the past that we didn't want to get out there for people, is how NBPE's strategy and terms compared to other listed private equity vehicles. So we believe NBPE offers access to an appropriately diversified private equity portfolio at a lower cost than most other private equity vehicles. So let's compare a bit. So listed fund-to-funds, as you know, listed fund-to-funds invest into private equity funds. Those underlying private equity funds they invest into often charge a 1.5% to 2% management fee on committed capital and a 20% carry. In addition, you have the fund-to-funds level fee and carry that are charged by those vehicles. Oftentimes, though, when you think of the listed fund-to-funds, you end up with some we almost call hyper-diversified portfolios with hundreds and hundreds and sometimes even thousands of underlying portfolio companies. And also, by going and running a fund-to-funds vehicle through a closed-end fund structure, you run either significant overcommitment risk and or potential return dilution from cash drag. The other, under the spectrum, you have some of the listed direct funds, and they often charge a single layer fee, but those fees, frankly, are materially higher than what NBPE charges. So a number of those vehicles charge 1.5% management fee on NAV, and some even charge on NAV plus committed capital, and a 15 to 20% carry. With those vehicles, you also have a concentrated manager risk because you're relying on one lead manager. And oftentimes very concentrated portfolios. And what's also interesting is if you look in the details of some of those managers' portfolios, though, some of those groups that are viewed as direct vehicles often have meaningful percentages of their portfolios that are invested in third-party funds. Nothing wrong with that, but those portions of their portfolio also have double layers of fees. So let's look at NBPE. So NBPE, on 78% of our private equity portfolio and growing percentage of our portfolio that's in direct investments, so vast majority and that's increasing each period, we just charge a single layer of fees. So 1.5% on private equity NAV, zero fee on cash, of course, and a 7.5% carry. So materially lower fee rates, if you can carry rates on a combined basis, than you'd find in a listed vehicle and definitely much cheaper than you'd find in a fund-to-funds vehicle. Also very appropriately diversified, so we're well diversified but not over diversified, and we're diversified across multiple top tier private equity managers, and also more limited over commitment risk because of the fact that we're making a meaningful amount of our investments directly out of the vehicle one by one. So obviously we're a bit biased, but we believe that NBP offers an appropriately diversified portfolio, and does that, frankly, at a lower cost than in most of investors' other options in the listed private equity space. And that's, of course, in addition to us offering our investors the opportunity for a dividend yield as well. So with that, we've obviously gone through a lot today, so we'd like to just open it up to any questions that you may have. Operator?
And at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, that is star followed by the number one. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. And again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. And you do have a question from the line of Ian Schuler.
Hello, it's Ian Schuler at Stifel. Peter, in terms of the discount, you were talking a bit about the discount. Obviously, the discount on the listed private equity peer group is pretty high at the moment, I think 20% plus. I think one of the things the market's nervous of is listed comparable companies and multiples on those and the risk that they've maybe been coming off since the start of the year. Now, you've obviously done a valuation up to the end of February. I mean, was that impacted by listed comps to any great extent?
Well, first of all, you know, as you, thanks, Ian. You saw in Paul's numbers, the valuations that we are holding our companies at are a massive discount to the public market valuations to begin with. So yes, we absolutely do factor in the movements in public market multiples, but we're already, you know, say, you know, the Russell, which was shown there, was being held at the end of December at 15 times, whereas ours was at 10 times, right? So we already were at a very, very significant discount there. By the way, one thing that's important to note, that's for that massive discount of private equity valuations to public valuations is very true in the U.S. It's not true in Europe. In Europe, most private equity valuations are held pretty much at the same market multiple as you find in the public. So I don't mean company by company, but just sort of if you look at private equity new deal averages versus where the average multiples are in the European public market. So we already have a very large cushion built into our portfolio, and yes, that, you know, we did factor in the public market movements in our portfolio, but it's not exactly a one-to-one given the massive discount that we already hold our portfolio at relative to market multiples.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Charles Murphy.
Yeah, good. Good morning. I've got a question on the income portfolio side to begin with, and I've got one on the equity side. But on the income portfolio, we've seen debt trade off quite hard this year to the end of February. How, and your second lien debt, how many points did your portfolio valuation come off by?
So yeah, couple things on that. The valuations that we're using there, remember, we're investing the debt of private equity backed companies, right? And and the debt that we are holding vast majority of them private transactions and ones for which there's not a public or not a public mark. And sometimes if there is some degree of trading, it's, you know, a trade every number of months sort of thing as opposed to anything else. So for the small number of names that we have where there's actually some degree of active trading, still not like, you know, you'd find in a public high yield or something, but where there's some more active trading, we actually run those through the actual marks through. The rest are done on a private valuation basis. Importantly, though, when we look at it, we actually do a fundamental analysis of the companies, right? So if we're investing, let's say, into the debt of a private equity-backed company, we're not going and saying, oh, public debt, you know, the high-yield index moved by X, so therefore we should move our debt by X. On the other hand, what you're looking at it is we're more senior in the capital structure than the equity by definition, right? So if, let's say, we're holding the debt of a particular private equity backed company and one of our listed private equity peers is holding the equity of that same company, you'd be in a position where we actually think we're money good. we very much think we're money good on the credits, or else we would write them down. And we think we're holding them at very reasonable levels. They're all performing, all, you know, strong free cash flows, all that, for all the metrics that Paul described. And so what we do there is the same way if, you know, the high yield index rallies, we don't write up the privates. We the same way that, you know, you have a technical sell-off, we also don't write it down. We actually do fundamental analysis company by company on how we view the prospects for that individual business and whether or not we think we're going to get repaid on the privately negotiated transaction that we have. So, you know, if someone were to say, okay, well, the high yield index traded off, so therefore you should write down, you know, a piece of second lien that you own in an illiquid piece of second lien, our comment would be, well, wait a minute, if that debt isn't worth what we have it at, then the equity is zero because we're more senior in the capital structure, and we definitely don't think that's the case. We think there's real value in these businesses. So it's not a one-for-one sort of movement with public markets. The same way, because we already think we're doing things, you know, the same way on the equity side, for example. You know, if the public markets, you know, move up by 10%, we don't write up the portfolio by 10% on the equity side either. It's a fundamental companies-based analysis of what's the fair value for that business.
So essentially a holding of the par.
Or the price at which we purchased it, which is oftentimes a discount, either original issue discount or when we've bought things in the marketplace. One of the real opportunities we're finding right now, and actually, you know, Paul mentioned that, is one of the investments that we worked that we did in the first 2 months, but actually something we're spending a lot of time on going forward right now, is you have a lot of debt of private equity backed companies that are highly illiquid pieces of paper that were bought by liquid high yield funds that have daily liquidity, who had no business buying illiquid pieces of paper. So if it's a fully performing credit, it's money good, very current on its payments, you know, full covenant compliance, all that. But some high yield fund owns a big piece of it and needs to dump the paper because they have redemptions on their high yield fund. Those are the sorts of things that we're looking to buy and take advantage of the fact that we actually know the companies well. And can be opportunistic on the buy on something like that. So we view that sort of thing as a real opportunity for us right now, and it's something we're actively looking to take advantage of.
I'm fairly sure these debts don't have public credit ratings, but on a credit rating basis, where do you think the numbers come in on the sort of traditional analysis that the agencies might do? Sort of B minus, or are we a bit below?
It might be a bit below. On the other hand, remember though, if ours is not money good on the debt, then you should assume that the equity of all these companies is zero, right? We're more senior in the capital structure than everyone else. So if there's issues on our credit portfolio, it means that the equity value of almost every other listed private equity vehicle is zero.
Yeah, no, I get that entirely. Okay, right, just on the equity portfolio, on your metrics for it, which are helpful and useful, it only seems to be about for 55% of the portfolio. Given that you've only got 75, which is probably only 25 assets, given you've only got 75 positions, is there any chance you can boost the proportion that's covered, because it's sort of, this will be tilted to the better performing companies?
Couple things there. It's actually, well, this is the numbers you describe are by value. So obviously it's the bigger portion of the NAV. The other important part though is, and we have more grant, obviously limits of what you can show in this deck. We have more detail in the annual report, so I suggest you look there in a little bit more detail. It's not that we don't go and we actually analyze all the direct companies. What we don't do though and show with an EBITDA multiple is businesses that are not best valued on an EBITDA multiple. So for example, we exclude from here public stocks that we own. The public stocks we hold we own, we just hold at the public stock valuation. We don't try to use, obviously, an EBITDA multiple for the public stock, right? Or, for example, there are certain businesses, like if it was, you know, a balance sheet financial services company where, you know, where it's sort of, you know, a multiple of book value, or, an E&P business where it's sort of acreage or something like, you know, price per acre or something like that. So what we do is, so it's not that we're not valuing them. It's actually for the others, they're just the right valuation metric is not enterprise value to EBITDA, but rather is a valuation metric that's other than that. And therefore, you know, you just can't really include it, those sort of valuations, an enterprise value EBITDA basis, because that's just not how every company is valued. So that's really the main difference on the spread there.
So put it a different way. So what proportion of your portfolio do you think you value on an EBITDA basis?
Paul, do you have the number on that?
The number is 55%. That is valued on that metric based on the fair value. So it's just over half of the total value is that way.
Right. So the numbers you've got in your sheet are basically almost 100% of those assets valued on an EV EBITDA basis.
Well, 55% of the portfolio is valued on that basis. And that's all of the companies that we have that are valued on that basis. So
right.
Peter described as price to books, so some are revenue multiples.
Mm-hmm.
But everything we can value that way, we do value that way and include in that average.
All right, that's cool.
Yeah, and by the way, for those ones, if you find more detail in the annual report, the page that covers this in the annual report gives what percentage of the assets are valued using other metrics and describes what those other metrics are. So you can find more details on that in the annual report.
Thank you. I think I'm done on my question. Sorry about that.
No. Great question. Thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Lewis Margaris.
Good morning, gentlemen. I've been interviewed. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Since 2008, I think this is the best monthly presentation I've listened to. Very thorough, very competent job, and nicely done. I was glad to see the reduction in leverage. I think that's probably a good time at this point in the investment cycle. That was one thought that came to mind. I have been talking to you since 2008 about repurchasing shares. I had to walk out for just a moment. Did you discuss that at all?
We did not. Short answer is no, Lou. We did talk about the dividend and the dividend reinvestment plan, but did not talk about share repurchases.
Clearly, at some point, it would make economic sense to do that. I'm not quite sure what level you guys think about. 20%, 30%, 40%. Where do you? What kind of analysis are you doing? As you know, we've talked about this ad nauseum.
Right. So a couple of things there. One, you know, as you know, during the financial crisis, we did buy back over 10% of the outstanding shares at a very, very accretive price for investors. We also, though, subsequently have instituted our dividend, and so we are paying cash out to investors and giving investors their own option, either directly, you know, by giving them the cash and allowing them to do it, or actually through the dividend reinvestment plan as well, giving investors the option who want to go and effectively have the equivalent of that, doing that themselves. But giving investors the option of whether or not they want to be using the capital on that basis. We don't have a number that we publish or we give in terms of a specific price at which we would buy. We keep a plan in place so that have the ability to make use of that as appropriate and have all the appropriate tools. Our view, though, is that while at certain points in time there can be an opportunistic purchase that can be accretive for investors, that we think that the right thing for a vehicle is to go and have high quality investment returns, generate strong returns. Also, having a dividend yield we think is important as well, because giving cash back to shareholders in that way. So we don't believe that that just buying back shares is the way to go and actually generate returns for investors, but it's something that we is a tool in the toolbox that we'll make use of when the board feels appropriate. But there's not a published number that we give out on that point. But importantly, focused on continued strong investments. And also having the dividend and allowing to give cash to shareholders to allow them to make their decision on whether to buy shares or not.
For these years, I've argued that funds like yours bring a value added, and this may shock people. I think it's fairly priced at a premium, not a discount, which is been a point that I've argued for a number of years. It probably should be included at some point around these levels, because when you get a 25% discount, you're talking about an immediate 35% gain on money you invest, which certainly seems reasonable in the context of the performance of the last several years. I have to commend your performances to the upper quartile of the companies that I look at. You guys have done a great job. You built the dividend. I'm, a staunch supporter. I've never sold a share of stock. In fact, bought a bunch more recently. But I think it would be appropriate at these levels of a 25% discount to strongly consider buying stock. I know you talked about it. Anyway, that's...
Appreciate the feedback and thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
And you do have a follow-up question from the line of Charles Murphy.
Gents, apologies. The healthcare program, how healthcare royalty program, how much of the portfolio does that account for?
Thank you. Actually, I meant to mention that on that page. Let me just get back to that. I have the specific numbers. That portion of the program, of the overall portfolio at December of 15 was $28 million.
$28 million.
Yeah. Okay. We had a decent amount of realization activity during 2015. So at the end of the year, it was at $28
million. Yeah. Okay, that's cool. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And thank you for mentioning that. I meant to mention that on the call.
And there are no further questions on the phone lines at this time.
Great. Well, thank you very much, everyone. And once again, appreciate any feedback that you have either on the presentation or on the substance here of our strategy and our execution. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your participation. This does conclude today's conference call. You may now disconnect.